Welcome to The Problem, a Lockwood & Co. podcast. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Alan.
And today we're talking about part six, the second part of part six.
Right.
The end of the book, the final three chapters. Chapter 28, 29, and 30. I nailed it.
That's it. That's what we're talking about. The Whispering Skull, the end of
Whispering Skull. The Whispering Skull. I did not say the name of the book. By, you know, Jonathan Stroud, the author, who I don't know that we've mentioned full name in quite a few episodes. Not that anybody here is confused about who wrote these books.
You guys know what you're listening to? Do you know which you really need all this, right?
All right. Chapter 28. In chapter 28, Joplin dies. George comes back to life. Lucy breaks a mirror and Lockwood shows up. Also, Kipps is there. So is Skull.
I know. After I wrote this, I was like, and Skull is there, Alan.
but it's too long. Yeah.
It's already too long.
So the chapter art is Bickerstaff.
It is. You're right. Yeah. I had to pull up my book. Yeah. I don't imagine Bickerstaff like this, but I think it does match.
No, but that's the only what it could be.
Oh, yeah. It matches the description, I think, that's in the book. This is one of those things. We talked about this before of like the author will give you like a detailed description sometimes. Mm-hmm. And then your brain just like, And then it like does its own thing that has nothing to do with that. So like, I always see Bickerstaff as kind of having like glowing eyes. And that's like kind of all you can see underneath the hood and stuff. You can't really see anything else.
Well, in this chapter, Lucy talks about the hood being pushed back and how then she realizes he's just like a normal dude. And so I always picture him just looking like a dude under the hood. But this is clearly a skull under the hood.
Yeah. Yeah.
With like a really creepy hand.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe the artist also just imagined her own thing.
Yeah, exactly. It looks cool. It's just funny how that works.
Yeah. So yeah, then we start off with George being dead, obviously. Yep. As we all know, he's not in any of the other books.
Right.
Joplin is very upset about it. And so is Lucy, but she's more in like a denial upset way.
I like that Joplin is like, beautiful things. That's not scientific. What am I supposed to do with this? This isn't, because that's what George said.
Yeah. And now he's just dead and we can't do anymore. And it's almost dawn and he's ruined everything.
He's very petulant.
Yeah.
Very weird.
But it's important to recall that Lucy does think George is dead, but still has to get a dig in on him.
Oh, wait, what do you mean? What
does she say? She's like, she calls his name and then Kipps is like, it's no good. He's gone. He's like, no, he always looks like that. You should see him in the mornings.
That's right.
Like, can you imagine saying that about your dead friend? Like that's how you know he's not actually dead, because that's terrible.
Yeah, she's still giving it to him. It reminded me of in the very beginning of the book, in the first chapter, she like, well, it's not her. I don't know. Is it Lucy's description of George? I guess it is. She describes like his like slack jawed and all this like stuff about his face and his facial expressions, like making fun of him. And it's like a funny way to kick off the book. But it's also very close to the description of George's death in the previous chapter. And I was like, it's almost like a weird, soft foreshadowing. And that we're like even kind of calling back to it here in a way is kind of like, it's still fun. Even though like something crazy happened, he's like trying to be like, it's okay, guys. Come on. We're having fun here. It's okay. Like, don't worry too much.
Yeah. I have to assume that was there for the kids, because that just wouldn't happen. anyways, wild. Joplin decides to still, despite the encroaching dawn, to still try again with Lucy and goes to like get her from where she's tied up on the at the chair with Kipps. And I don't know, Lucy tries to talk her way out of, you know, being killed by throwing Skull under the bus, basically.
Right. Yeah. She's like, hey, if you think this mirror is cool, I've got a thing I could show you.
Yeah.
And Skull's like, whoa, leave me out of it, dude. Like, what are you doing? I didn't come here for that.
And I'm so interested about this bit because Kipps is there and he hears what she's saying. So do we just assume that he doesn't believe her, or he does believe her and he just never brings it up with anybody? Or because I actually don't remember in any of the later books them actually telling Kipps about Skull But eventually Skull does, I mean, Kipps does know about Skull.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he's so dumb that it like flew over his head. Like he just doesn't get it. He's or, just like, whatever.
I would say I would chalk it up more to him thinking Lucy is lying just to buy herself some yeah. time. I just don't remember it ever coming up again with Kipps. I could be wrong. Maybe I'm not remembering. Anyways, just, I don't know. I don't remember Kipps and Skull ever specifically being introduced, but they've definitely know about each other eventually.
Yeah, it's a good point, though. I had never thought about it because I just see it as like antagonism between Lucy and Joplin and kind of Bickerstaff at the same time. And Kipps is just so peripheral to everything that happens. Oh, I don't even think about him.
He's not important at all. Yeah. But anyways, during this whole thing, like Bickerstaff gets free. And then suddenly, amazingly, George is alive. No one saw it coming. And then there's a big scuffle while Lucy tries to keep Bickerstaff from getting to Kipps. And George and Joplin have, you know, man fight 2.0.
Right.
You know, yeah.
Nerd fight. Yeah.
I picture it as like when Xander and Harmony fight in that episode of Buffy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's I picture good. Happening. The slow-mo like right. slapping at each other.
And it's like, they didn't do this for sure in the show, like the whole showdown, but between yeah. them is like extremely well done and cool. But that would have been, there's no comedy hijinks for sure.
No. Once the show gets to like a climactic moment, it remains there. It doesn't like to break the tension, which is fair. It's a different medium.
Yeah. There is a moment like where Joplin, it seems like he's like very taken over by Bickerstaff. I think this is interesting. Bickerstaff is like trying to exert an influence over Lucy, it seems to me. And Joplin at the same time is like, you know, do what I say, blah, blah, blah. And there's this passage where Lucy says, I drew myself up. I clenched my fist. Something slammed shut inside of me, closing off my grief behind stony walls.
Right.
My mind grew calm. My hatred was like a winter lake, icy, clear, and stretching out forever, which is like badass. It's very, very cool.
It is. But also, I feel like it's only something to do because death has been such a presence in her life. So she's like, yes, George is dead. We're going to think about it later. Right now, we got to kill these people.
Yeah. The line right after this, I thought this is so weird and maybe doesn't mean anything. It says, I sat and gazed at Joplin. There's like an ellipsis. So this is like icy, clear, and stretching out forever ellipsis. I sat and gazed at Joplin. But then in the British version, the UK version, it says, I stood and gazed at Joplin. And I'm like, what is going on there? Like, is she sitting or standing, or is it a metaphorical standing? Is it like I'm standing up to you? Like I was like, why this change? I think she is tied to a chair at this moment.
No, maybe. Where is
maybe
this
I'm wrong
line?
About that though. It's like I don't know what to tell you for pages. But it says like 394 in mine, but it's like only a few pages after. George is still dead and stuff, so like I don't know.
Okay, hold on. She is indeed still tied to the back of the chair, so she must be standing.
Mm-hmm.
So America was wrong.
Yeah, I don't know why. Surprise, America was wrong. I don't understand that change, and it doesn't matter. But it was just so startling to me to like listen to the audio and read the words and have that be so different. They do literally mean very different things, and I was like, what?
And also one of them is physically impossible because she is tied to the back of a chair standing.
Yeah, I don't know what, like that's why I said like you could metaphorically stand up to someone, and she is kind of doing that, but like I was like, what does this mean? I don't know that it means anything, but it was weird. Oh yeah, so like you said, Bickerstaff gets out and stuff, and there's this whole thing about like where it says Bickerstaff's ghost in the circle behind Joplin made a sudden urgent movement as if he had been shoved between the shoulder blades Joplin stumbled forward. His eyes were voids. With a snarl, he raised the knife and started for me. And so it's like he is, even though he's in the circle, he's like able to kind of possess Joplin, or like he's puppeteering him in a really interesting way.
That is weird.
I don't think that we've ever seen anything like that. It feels like something particular to Bickerstaff, but I think it's like what you were saying last time about like he's a cult leader and like this is kind of like his thing.
Right, that he can manipulate people. So now that translates to physical manipulation when he's a ghost.
Yeah, he has some kind of psychic connection to Joplin that, you know, lets him do that.
There's so much, like, I have to assume that somewhere within the Fitz building, someone's experimenting with this, you know, and I want to know, like, how deep do you have to go with a ghost before they can physically control with you?
Yeah.
With you, you know what I'm saying? Just physically control you. And, like, could that happen with Skull and Lucy? Because presumably they get closer, well... I don't want to talk about spoilers here. So,
well, that was exactly where my mind went to, though. And I think that it's part of the point of the book. And I think it's part of why it's here. Like, because they have been, she's been, you know, resisting Skull for the whole book. And there's been this issue, you know, that George brought up that, like, hey, you got to be careful when you talk to these things, according to Marissa Fitz, you know?
Right.
Because they're like, dangerous. They'll get inside you and mess with you. And that's what has happened to Joplin. But Lucy does, like, because she's an agent, she's cultivated this ability that, you know, I read out earlier where she's like, you know, her rage and sorrow and all this stuff are like shut away somewhere else. She's like, you don't control me. I control me. And so she's able to have this relationship with Skull because of her self-control.
That's interesting.
Joplin doesn't have that. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it seems like Bickerstaff is reaching out to her in a similar way, and she's just not having it. Like, he can't do this to her.
Yeah. And not to, you know, discount Lucy here, but also maybe it like takes time for him to form a connection with a human, with an alive human. And also maybe doing like two at once would be difficult. Like, this is what I'm saying. I need to be in on these experiments, you know? I want to know. Not like physical, like in a book way, you know, like I've talked about this before, I think, but I need somebody to write an adult book in this world so that we get all the nitty gritty. Not that I have anything wrong with middle grade. I love a good middle grade book. I always think to myself, like, if there's really good world building, I always think to myself, I need an adult. I need to know everything.
You need a pair of twins. So we have a control group.
Yeah.
So we know.
Anyways,
experiments.
So Lucy's fighting off the Bickerstaff ghost with Kipps yelling out advice and instructions because he's useless, which I love.
I like that when George comes back, like, Skull is mad about it. He's like, oh, that's typical.
Oh, yeah.
Everything was going so well, but he's back.
Oh, and it's safe to say that when, not safe, we should mention that when Lucy was offering Skull up to Joplin, Skull was most worried about ending up in the bath with him.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. He's like, the next thing you know, we'll be taking baths together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Just A+ Skull content, as per usual. Eventually, Lucy gets a big iron chain and gets it, like, shoves it right into the middle of the Bickerstaff ghost, which makes him disappear as they do. And she says it'll probably be a bit before it can reform.
Yeah, I mean, Bickerstaff is like, she's like plus 10 to Bickerstaffs. Like, she skewered this dude with a sword. She like takes him out with a chain whip. It's he's never been a problem for her.
Yeah, I guess he's her like favorite enemy.
Yeah. I think at that point, George has like kind of handled Joplin.
Yeah. So, or they were like wrestling, let's say, on the ground, and then they were both just sort of tired. So they rolled away from each other.
I think that when she takes out Bickerstaff, like, it takes something away from Joplin.
Yes. Sorry. Joplin was on top. With a cry, he tore himself from George's grasp and tottered to his feet. And that's when she takes out Bickerstaff.
Yeah.
So, yes, that kind of, but George was holding his own.
Yeah. He was doing good. It was, and the whole time Kipps is like, whoa, watch it. You're going to hit me in the head with that chain. You're just like, a little to the left, a little, it's like Kipps with the commentary over here while Lucy's like saving the day.
Yeah. And then after all that, when Lucy's going to do something, try to destroy the bone glass, she's like having a conversation with Skull about it. And again, Kipps is right there.
Oh, true. Yeah. He can only hear one half of that. So who knows what he thinks.
He can only hear one half, but like either he thinks Lucy's insane or she's having a conversation with a ghost.
Mm-hmm. Does he think maybe she's talking to the mirror? Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe. And just when she makes sure to keep the mirror face down so that she's not looking into it, but it does still kind of get her. And yeah. She has this moment where she's like, I could absolutely, you know, I should just look. It would solve everything. You know, it would give me bliss. My body was parched, but the glass would quench my thirst. I was famished, but the glass would give me food. And then Skull, like, saves her.
Yeah.
And
by insulting her.
By insulting her. Yeah, that's, well, typical. But, you know, he says, like, poor, stupid Lucy. And tells her what to do. Like, just smash the glass, dude. Like, obviously, that would have been, why wouldn't you just do that? But whatever.
Yeah, because she asked him before this, like, how do I unmake it? And he's like, why would you want to do that? Like, he won't answer the question. But now he's like telling her.
Yeah, he ultimately does not want to lose Lucy.
Yep.
And this does make me want to say best friends. But actually, I just think it's because she's his only option.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also true, though, that he's like, oh, my God, are you really going to fall for the mirror and die? Just come on. Like, he is fed up with her, too, at the same time, I think.
To be fair, it's a mirror. Just smash it. Like, what?
Yeah.
Didn't work, why would that not be the first thing you tried?
Yeah. I love the description that you read where it's like, I've highlighted the same thing and I wrote desire because it's like so clearly the mirror is like all about desire. And it keeps talking about that in the whole book. So it's just like a really beautiful articulation of pure desire written out there.
Yeah. It makes sense to me because hasn't so much of humanity have been wanting to know what does happen, a desire to know without having to die.
Yeah.
Because it's like the one thing we can't ever know. So, yeah.
Or by knowing, then like the point of knowing would be to master it, you know, because that's the point of knowing anything for us. And then, you know, once you've mastered it, then you can slap a label on it and sell it to people and make some people poor and make yourself rich. And it's great. That's all you need to do is know what happens next. And then you can be master of the market. If only we could figure out death, we could be rich.
I'd say that was depressing, but I guess it's just true. Anyways, then Joplin kind of gets himself together. Oh, Lucy breaks the mirror. She smashes the glass. The ghosts are released. They don't hurt anyone. They just leave. Is that now? Is that later? I swear I had a note about that in here. Oh, I had the note earlier because there's a bit earlier where Joplin like crosses the iron line to the mirror, but the ghosts leave Joplin alone. And I just think that's interesting that they don't, because all the ghosts that we've seen so far are, well, except for Annabelle Ward at the end, it wasn't so much that they wanted to hurt people so much as it seemed like that was just the only thing that they could do, right? Like, that they didn't really know what's going on. But, like, as long as it was a type 2, they were sort of drawn to hurt people. Meanwhile, like, when we saw the end of Annabelle Ward, she just wanted, after she got her revenge, she was good. She just wanted to go. She didn't, like, immediately go for somebody else. And here we see these ghosts when Joplin crosses the iron line. They don't attack him.
Yeah. Or Lucy.
Or Lucy, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just ask her to set them free, which she does.
Yeah. I think that's so huge. It's like there's some kind of relationship to the problem that's being illustrated in that. That's like really mysterious and interesting. And like, that's one of the things that I'm like, I really want answers to that, and it pulls me forward through the larger mystery in the story every time that this kind of thing happens.
I don't think we ever really get like full answers about ghosts.
Yeah, that's good. You shouldn't do that. But like, as a writer, you should keep pulling people forward.
Yeah, like
as much as possible. I mean,
you could extrapolate from book 4 stuff, but we're not there yet.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, sort of Joplin kind of gets himself together, picks up an old antique gun, and then, surprise, Anthony Lockwood is here. I said I would never say his first name again, but I happened to glance down at the book, and his whole name was written out, so I just did it. Oh, my God.
Good old Anthony.
Yeah.
Big A.
Yeah, we should just call him that. Big A Lockwood. Anyway, he's here, and because it's him, he knows exactly... Oh, Joplin has a gun, but it's like an old antique gun. He knows exactly what type of gun it is and that it's unlikely to be able to fire in these circumstances.
It's very funny. It's a good moment. It's a very like castrating moment for Joplin to be like, yeah, that thing's not going to work. And I know just as much about the antiques as you do, old man. Mm-hmm. And I'm here to save the day. I like that he shows up. And there's like the problems have largely been handled by the time Lockwood shows up. Yep. I really, really like that.
Yeah, he's just there to say that they don't have to worry about the gun.
Yeah, he doesn't do much. It's not like in the show, it felt weird when Lockwood shows up and he's the one who takes out Bickerstaff. That moment feels like really forced. Out of all the moments in the show, I feel like that one's the most forced, where he's like, they're my friends. Get away from them.
That was very awkward.
This just feels, I don't know, it feels like exactly right. Like the team does what it does. And it's not that he's like the hero who saves the day. He's just the leader of the team.
Yeah. And I actually really like it because it still gives him, like we see in the next chapter, see at the end with the newspaper article. That he still gets to be the hero in the public's eyes. Like he still gets to have the attention, which is how George and Lucy prefer it. Right.
Right.
So that's great. Anyways. So Joplin ends up being got by Bickerstaff.
Yeah. This is a real like fallen to Mount Doom moment for Joplin. Like he's undone by his own evil.
And then everyone's really tired. So they all just kind of go, and there's like a moment of silence and relief. And then Kipps is all, could somebody untie me after you've had your rest?
I'm here too.
Love that he just stayed tied up the whole time and could not help. And that brings us to chapter 29.
In chapter 29, George reveals that he could never see the mirror and Barnes awards Lockwood & Co. the Bickerstaff case.
Whoop, whoop. Honestly, other than those two things, I don't think there's much to talk about in this chapter. The chapter art is George's glasses, which we learn are very important. And we get like a brief summary of how the sword fight with Winkman's men went above ground with Lockwood and Bobby Vernon and Ned Shaw and Cat Godwin, and how there were some struggles, but they won. And I just love this image that of like the five captives laying helpless on the ground with Cat Godwin standing guard.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's fun. But yeah, they also, Lockwood at one point called Deeprak. So Deeprak shows up just as they're all exiting we decided it was a chapel.
It's a chapel.
Chapel. Yeah. Barnes
That's what
comes
he calls it,
so. Running up the stairs to the chapel and they're like, here's your mirror. Sorry, it's broken. And then Barnes looks disappointed that it's broken, and I find that so suspicious.
Yeah, he's upset about it. It makes sense to me because I think him turning that intact to his superiors would be like what they want, and he knows that.
Right, but his whole spiel earlier in the book was about, you know, how you need to make these artifacts safe and blah, 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 and it's broken now, so it's safe. It's the safest it could be. The ghosts are gone. The thing is gone, and it just makes me think that, like, that he never really cared about that he just cares about giving it to his superiors so that they can experiment on it, which is still the same problem that of having it in the public.
I would think that from Barnes' perspective, it being broken and like, and all of that stuff is not safe. Like, safe is with the institution, is with his bosses. So it's not just because it was like rendered impotent and can't be used doesn't make it safe. True safe would be like people can use it to understand stuff or like whatever, like they have control of it is safe. Now nobody can have control of it. It's useless. So that's not safe. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, I get what you're saying, but I don't think that he's being dishonest earlier. I just think that like his idea of safety is, it's kind of like a cop's idea of safety is like everybody around me is obeying me. And it has nothing to do with like, are they actually safe? Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like,
anyways, I don't like it.
Yeah, it's not good. Yeah.
But then Lockwood comes back to talk to, or I don't know. There's a bunch of stuff going on.
There is a bunch of stuff going on.
It's all kind of all over the place. Lucy thinks Kips. Is that what's happening there?
For
going after George and for supporting her in the catacombs, she thanks Kips, but also calls him a coward at the same time. So it's great.
I don't know about that. Well, yeah, she's like, the way that you ran away at Bickerstaff's house, I never would have guessed you would have what it takes to go after George.
Yeah.
So that is kind of a backhanded compliment. You're right. I think it's good of her, though, to say, you know, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, same. And then, you know, we have that bit from Kips saying, like, you don't know what it's like when you lose your powers and how you can still feel the ghost, but you can't see them. And it's just terror. And I guess that's an interesting perspective, because a lot of what we see from the adults in these books are just, yeah, you all suck a lot. But it's an interesting perspective.
This is the only time so far that Kips has ever been vulnerable, you know, in the story to any of the characters, and like opened up and, you know, like, I'm scared all the time and there's nothing I can do about it. And I have no ability to fight back. And I think this goes miles and miles towards arcing him, you know, into a likable character who can join the team.
Yeah.
Just this little bit. It's a good moment.
Yeah. And then Lockwood comes over to join them and basically confirms that they won the bet. You know, Barnes awarded them the case, blah, blah, blah. But he did. Lockwood voluntarily split the commission with them, 70-30, obviously. Mm-hmm. And when he's saying this, you can just feel him being like, yeah, I'm the better man than you in more ways than one. Like, it's just dripping.
There are different ways to be magnanimous. Yeah. And this is the most like smug way to be magnanimous. Yeah.
And then Kip says, you know, he'll do the ad. And Lockwood's like, yeah, that's all I needed. You don't actually have to do it. I don't care. I just needed to hear you say it.
I think there is like a little nugget. Yeah, it's good. It's really good.
Yeah.
There is a little nugget here where Lockwood says, also, I know how you tried to help George and Lucy, and I won't forget that. So don't worry. The forfeit isn't necessary.
Yeah.
And it made me think about like all this stuff about like your heart's desire that we've been talking about the whole time. And I, you know, at the beginning of the story, it really feels like Lockwood's heart's desire is to be like the greatest agency in London and to make Kips, you know, to humiliate him publicly and all of that kind of thing. But by the end of the story, it seems more that his greatest desire is protecting his relationship with George and Lucy and keeping them safe. The way they ran after George, you know, the way he jumped down that hole after Lucy and everything.
Right.
And him saying this to Kips, it just like, I was like, aw, Lockwood is changing. He's opening up. He's flowering. So like, that was just sweet and will continue to evolve over the next chapter too. So
there is that. Yes, obviously. But it also does feel very much like him saying all this to Kips makes it so Kips can't really hate him anymore, which probably just makes Kips hate him even more. You know, or that's what it feels like to me, that he's like, yeah, I'm being super nice and reasonable. And then Kips being like, I can't even go back to our, you know, his group and like speak bad about him now.
Right.
You know, like so frustrating. What would I say?
Yeah. And then he was really nice to me. And you couldn't even believe it. He
gave us the money even though I was tied up and we don't have to do the forfeit. And he said, thank you.
Yeah.
What an asshole.
Yeah. It is a real heaping coals with niceness scenario. But I do feel like there has been evolution in Lockwood and that this moment is supposed to demonstrate it. I don't think this was Lockwood's plan all along to like win and then be magnanimous in this way.
No, certainly not at the beginning when they were so angry at each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good. And then directly after that, Lockwood apologizes to George, and George apologizes to Lockwood and Lucy. And Lucy says she's not apologizing to anyone because she's got nothing to apologize for.
Yeah, I love that.
Yep. And that's, oh, and then we get George's explanation about how he didn't die, which was that there were no lenses in his glasses. So he couldn't see the mirror anyways.
Yeah. So like, I don't know about this. So yeah, this is clever. Mm-hmm. It basically boils down to kind of a joke, and I don't mind the whole thing being solved by a joke. It kind of just bothers me that George's heroism can only be wrapped in jokes. I don't know. I wish it was a little bit.
I mean, you could make an argument that he didn't know it was going to work. You know, yeah. Like he didn't know that
not being able to see it,
that it wouldn't still bring him in or curse him or whatever it is that the mirror does.
Yeah.
So I think it is still very brave of him to just look at it head on.
It was. I wish it was like treated a little bit differently. You could still have the joke. I just want a little bit more for George, I guess.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I don't know. Like at the same time, like this is how he's calibrated the characters, and it makes a lot of sense. I do like that, like mechanically it makes everything kind of necessary and pay off and stuff like that. It's very economical, like to have the, it's not just that the first fight that Kipps witnessed was like a pathetic slap fest. Mm-hmm. It like had a mechanical purpose in the plot to knock the lenses out of his frames so that later he would be wearing the frames, but not be able to see anything anyway. So because he's nearsighted, he was able to just gaze into the mirror and nothing happens to him.
Speaking of someone with perfect vision, I can't imagine it.
Is that true? Can you really see just fine?
Yeah, I don't.
Oh, yeah. I have terrible vision. Anything. I can't see. I can see about 2 inches away from my face and that's it. So I, like George, would survive the mirror without my lenses.
I mean, except for that time for like 2 months of my life where my right eyeball wasn't working properly.
Well, that's different.
My vision was bad then.
Yeah.
Don't recommend it.
I just always assume because you like have physical books and stuff. So like I ruined my vision as a child. I had bad genetic vision anyway, but I ruined it by reading physical books, you know, like underneath the sheets with a light close to my face. And I just assume anybody who reads physical books is blind.
I have always wanted to be somebody who had glasses because I feel like I have that.
That's
soul,
so funny.
You know,
I know. That's why I assumed you did.
But I don't. I've never needed them. My dad wore glasses all his life and my mom needed to get glasses as she got older. So I figure it's coming for me eventually, but not yet.
Interesting.
But gosh, when it does.
You'll be so happy.
I'll be so. I mean, only because I have insurance.
That's funny.
So chapter 30, the final chapter of the book, Lockwood reveals the forbidden room to Lucy and George. Yeah, I guess that is really all that happens in this. They have some conversations before that, but nothing interesting. So yeah, we get the, I mean, you know what I mean? Nothing like life changing.
It's a denouement. It's like just a, you know, everything's okay. Feel good.
So we get the newspaper article about the case being done, similar to the end of book one. The important thing in this one is that they are covering up the bone glass. They're just saying that it was Bickerstaff who was causing all the problems.
Right. And there's, they say Joplin was the, was like a psychopath and.
Oh, I meant like supernatural wise, just Bickerstaff. Not the.
I like what Lockwood says about Joplin because Lockwood didn't get a chance to look into the mirror, and this is so mirror coded. Like he was too fascinated by the past. He spent too long rooting in dark corners of our history. Finally, his obsession corrupted him and took his sanity. Perhaps this is a lesson for us all. And it's like, yeah, Lockwood, maybe you're wrapped up in your past, and you should fucking let that go. Maybe that.
Because you said it was mirror coded. And
just mirror coded like in general, that way. Yeah.
Yes, I see. It also feels like it feels like DPRAC propaganda.
Yeah.
You know, because it feels, you know, like don't get involved with artifacts, kids.
Yes.
Or adults, as it were. Whatever.
100%.
Relics is the word I've been looking for when I've been saying artifacts. Gosh, that's been bothering me. Anyways, so it's 3 days later. Everything's good. Now, the most egregious thing happens here. The sentence is, not only that, our check from DPREC, signed by Inspector Barnes himself, blah, 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 blah. And they spell check the American way, and it makes me so angry because I hate that spelling.
Oh, interesting.
Of check.
Okay. Like a check mark.
No,
right?
That is spelled, it's, they're two different things.
No, I know. Yeah. Okay. I get what you're saying. I'm trying to explain to the people listening what the difference is.
Yes. Americans dumbed down the spelling of check.
We dumb it
so
down.
That was all check was spelled like a check mark. So when you get a physical check and when you have a check mark, they are C-H-E-C-K. While right. in civilized areas of the world, we differentiate between the two, and a physical check of money is spelled C-H-E-Q-U-E. And just as somebody who works in money with software that was designed in America, I have to deal with it a lot, and I just hate it. I hate it so much.
That's interesting. I never think about it. It must be French in origin.
With the Q-U-E? In the
English
yeah,
language.
Probably.
Yeah. Which makes sense because it's about money, because like that's where all the money came from in England.
Yeah, I don't know why. Like, you know, you take the U's out of things. That's fine. It's weird looking to me, but whatever. But the check thing, it just, I don't know. I hate it.
It doesn't make sense. I agree that you should have separate spellings for, you know, a homonym. It literally just means it's confusing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree. It's confusing. But he does. He's signed the check himself. And you texted me about that and you were
no,
I can't believe
that's
this.
Not even,
and I was like,
that's not even the one I texted you about.
Oh, that's not?
Okay. No, because I texted you that I had to Google something. I didn't need to Google this. This one is like a problem in my daily life.
Okay.
There's one on the next page that I Googled one thing and then this whole America versus UK thing came up and I was like, what? I didn't even know about this one. Let's just get to it. So they continue talking about everything. They're just like debriefing, unimportant, right? Great interview, Lockwood, Kipps, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? Now, so we learned that George has been making them their favorite meals as an apology, which is great because then she's like, but neither, you know, he didn't have to really, but neither Lockwood nor I had gotten around to telling him yet. Wonderful. I love characters being motivated by food.
Yeah.
As like, yes, my whole life. Now, but the food that they are eating here is chocolate flapjacks. And then I was reading that and I was like, what is the difference between a flapjack and a pancake? And so I Googled it. And so in North America, no difference. Flapjack and pancake can be used interchangeable. In the UK, however, a flapjack is a completely different thing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't either. And I was like, what? So it's the way it was described to me, a flapjack is in the UK sounds more like an oat cake because it's something that you bake. Or
of course.
What I was reading it, they were like more similar to a granola bar kind of, where it's basically like oats and brown sugar and...
Oh, this makes more sense for Lockwood just kind of picking one up and chomping on it.
Yes.
I was like, that's some odd fucking behavior, dude.
Yes. So the scene makes a lot more sense, too. But also, I was like, I had no idea.
Yeah, I did not know that. I mean, I know that there are like crepes, you know, that are like a distant cousin. But that's also a French thing.
Yes.
But yeah, so this is like an oat cake or something. That's crazy.
It is more similar to an oat cake than to a pancake. Yeah.
Wow. And it's specifically, so I guess if you went to England and you ordered pancakes, you would get pancakes.
You'd get pancakes, yeah. But if you ordered flapjacks, you'd get
different.
This other thing.
Interesting. Scary. The pitfalls you could go into
accidentally. I feel like the term flapjacks is not used that often here.
Yeah.
People just say pancakes.
I feel like when it is used, it's almost like a corny kitsch kind of like old timey mountain culture.
Yeah,
like,
it definitely feels Appalachia.
Yeah,
I say that word out loud very seldom.
Yeah, Appalachian flapjack kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paul Bunyan nonsense.
Exactly.
Interesting. I had no idea.
Me neither. I was floored that there was this whole different thing. Anyways, blew my mind. It's not important at all, but I had to talk about it.
But yeah, Deeprak does cover up the whole mirror situation. And I would guess because of all of the rich people who are involved in trying to acquire it.
Oh, that's an interesting corruption thought.
And stuff.
That's, you know, not why I think it was covered up.
I don't think that anybody's saying that to Barnes, but I feel like the pressure would come on higher up Deeprak people who are telling Barnes, like, this is not safe information for the public.
I'm sure that's why Barnes thinks it's getting covered up, but I don't think that's why it's getting covered up.
Because...
Okay, look, we had that one email or communication from a listener who's, you know, didn't want us to talk about spoilers, but I'm going to... So I've been, I don't know, worried about it, even though I don't think I've done it less. I don't know. Anyways, I'm going to talk about some huge, huge end game spoilers here. So just, I don't know, turn us off if you hate me now. I whatever. Because their theory about being the ghosts using more than one source is correct.
Right.
The more sources that you gather together, the bigger the window until you do get a door.
I see. So you wouldn't. They wouldn't want to explain to the public and this was a mirror made of seven sources.
Yeah. They don't want to put that idea into people's heads about, oh, what does happen if we put sources together? And then suddenly there's doors all over the place. And I'm not saying they're worried about doors being all over the place. I'm saying Fitz is like, no, that's our thing.
Right. Yeah.
No one else is allowed that.
This is TM knowledge. This is, Yeah. That's kind of what I mean is like these rich people are involved. And then they're going to be the ones saying to Deeprak, like, don't talk about this at all, because it's not like they say, he had a dangerous artifact. They say, don't talk about it at all. Like, the mirror is not mentioned at all in the story.
I was picturing it more like we don't want to incriminate these rich people. That's
that too. But like, I don't even think that they care about that so much as like they care about the appearance of propriety, whatever, but it's what you're saying, that they don't want that knowledge out there.
Yeah.
That like things like this exist. I think that's totally right. And it's a big difference from the previous book where it was like, Mr. Fairfax died and that's such shame. And we didn't talk about his crimes and everything that was covered up for propriety. But now we're like covering up the thing that for the entire book, like you said, Barnes was like, this is an incredibly dangerous, like, you know, to the public problem of this mirror. And then we just never talk about it at all. And so like that feels different than we have to protect these rich people's reputation. This is like we have to keep knowledge away from regular people, which, you know, is like the point of the newspapers, kind of like to give people, regular people, information. So it's all pretty sinister.
I thought you were going to say the point of newspapers was to keep information away from people.
Well, I mean, you know, like whatever the point of something is, it becomes a tool to do the opposite thing. But it's a good way to like kind of escalate this whole feeling in the world, this sinister, you know, kind of conspiracy feeling about this hard-boiled supernatural world that he's created.
Yeah.
But still have this like happy ending.
Yeah, it's good. I really like this bit where they're just sort of, you know, talking and Lucy says, but here's the real question. What's the truth about the mirror? Did it do what Biggerstaff claimed? Could it actually have been a window onto what happens after death? A window on another world. And Lockwood, you know, sort of says that's the big paradox. You can't find out the truth without looking in the mirror, and looking in the mirror tends to kill you. And then he shrugs and says, I guess one way or another, it does show you the other side.
Right. Yeah.
And I really love that bit. That's great.
That's good. Yeah. And the truth has a cost. The books are about growing up in a lot of ways, and experience destroys innocence. And that's just kind of the same thing that he's talking about there, too.
Yeah. And then Lucy says, well, it's all irrelevant, you know, because I broke the mirror anyways. And I wrote down, yeah, this is absolutely not going to come back to bite them.
Yeah. This doesn't have anything to do with anything.
Definitely irrelevant. and then they get on to talking about Skull and what they should do with him and how, I actually had forgotten that this conversation happens where they do decide, where Lucy is like, no, I think if we go forward with this, I'll just end up being experimented on and I don't want that. So let's just keep this under wraps.
Yeah, that's a cool, I mean, that's terrible, but it's a cool arc for Lucy to come to this conclusion where she's like prioritizing her safety and happiness.
Yeah.
I think is like a good place for her to be at. And I don't think it's exactly where she was at the start of the story.
No.
And, as much as it is now.
And when she was explaining how Skull was helpful in his own way, I did once again write down best friends. And yeah, so when she says, can we keep it quiet for now? Lockwood is immediately like, of course we can. No problem. You know, whatever you want. It's your thing. And yeah, then they kind of get on the subject of secrets.
Mm-hmm. There is like a little line dropped in there too about like Winkman had an informer working at DPRAC.
Oh yeah. And that's because Winkman now knows who they are and knows their names.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, that's like the exact opposite of the show.
Yeah. Like, but we do keep talking about how the show this book, they keep doing the exact opposite.
It's weird.
Yeah.
They were like, not dramatic, not the exact wrong dramatic choice, Stroud. We're going to go the opposite direction. But they, so they must have found out. How do they know? Like, this is weird. Like, how would they know that there's somebody on the inside without knowing who the person is on the inside? And they got caught. It's, I don't know how you know that. But
don't think about it too hard.
Yeah, it's fine. DPRAC is corrupt. And Winkman is onto them and he's not happy. So like all of that is hanging over their head too.
And we have a brief moment where Lucy mentions like they tie together the artifact box thing that Penelope gave to the dude in the library, having the symbol on it that is the same symbol as what is on the goggles that they stole from Fairfax in the previous book.
Mm-hmm. The completely different guy in the library who is not the guy at the auction.
Yes.
And all of that. Yeah. So we bring that back at the end of this book, like we brought it at the end of the previous book. And they're like, no, I didn't see that because I was in a yoga position underneath the table.
Yes, we did get some more George humor, which is fine, I guess, whatever. But then, yeah, so some similarities are brought up between George and Joplin, but ultimately they're like, don't worry, George, we don't actually think you're like Joplin. You have friends. It's fine.
That's Lockwood has the nice little teasing joke.
Yeah.
Where he's like, nothing like him. He was a weird, friendless sociopath with morbid death obsessions. He picked up the plate. Flapjack loose.
Yeah.
So they're teasing each other because they're a family.
And teasing George is what they do.
Yeah.
But anyways, this brings Lockwood around to him wanting to tell them something. And it literally takes him like a full page and a half, if not 2 pages, to be like, yeah, I'm going to show you in the secret door.
Yeah.
Like it takes him so long to talk around to it because he's like, secrets are bad, so I'm going to show you my secret. But so weird. Anyways, so we go in the door and earlier in the book, the skull had mentioned something about there being iron in that room. And we find out that there is iron on the back of the door holding in like a psychic presence.
And there's like lavender in there.
And silver charms and all this.
Yeah.
I actually all kinds of stuff. Really hate this huge buildup because if you've read book 3, you know that it's literally nothing.
I guess. I don't know. I don't totally understand what's going on in this room. It seems like nothing is going on because of all of the suppressing presences.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's come back to it. So Lockwood said, Lucy says, you know, your parents, and Anthony says, no, my sister. But the descriptions all give very, like, okay, I'll read the whole thing. Our eyes adjusted. We gazed at what was in the room, and then I felt the floor pitch under me as if we were suddenly at sea. George cleared his throat. I put out my hand to clench his arm. Lockwood stood slightly behind us, waiting. Your parents? I was the first to find my voice close. Lockwood said, my sister. And that sounds very much like there is a ghost in that room.
Right. Yeah. But then that's literally the end of the book.
That's literally the end of the book. So I guess I'll come back to my frustrations with that later.
So like, we don't know. And I feel like I did not really know later anyway. Having read two more books, I still don't know. So like, which is fine. Like, I like not knowing, but it is a little confusing.
And now I'm so excited. I get to take my post-it notes out of this book so it can lie flat again.
The satisfying bit is I don't feel like we've ever talked about him having a sister in the story up to this point. Obviously he has parents and we've talked about how they're not there and they're gone and all of that stuff. And we don't get a name for the sister. And so I feel like this moment is a simultaneous reveal of I have a sister and, you know, that's what this room is about at the same time. So it's like a more shocking than it otherwise. I don't think that you could guess this moment. In other words, I guess is what I'm saying.
No, but I think like throughout these two books, you do sort of guess that there's a ghost in there. Like that's, I don't know. I feel like Lockwood was trying to pull one over on the reader by not having there be a ghost in there. I'm so sorry. I'm spoiling book three, but I don't think like, I think he just took it too far.
Yeah. It's weird. It's confusing. But you know, symbolically he is like letting them in and like opening doors and
yes. It's a nice moment. They're all
getting closer. Yeah.
I especially love just before they go in when Lucy is like, you don't have to, we don't care, you know, so not unless you're ready. And Longwood's like, no, let's do it.
Yeah. I really like that moment too, that it acknowledges that like, hey, this is a relationship. You don't, it's both ways.
Yeah.
We all have needs and like, you can protect yourself. It's fine. Yeah, that's really good. But I think it does show his growth. Like Lockwood at the beginning of the book couldn't do this. Like when Lucy even brought it up with Skull, you know, like what are the secrets behind that door? And he's like, I'll fire you if you even bring this up again. And now he's at this moment where they're standing inside the room together. So like,
yeah,
he has had growth.
And he does say he's been thinking about it since then. So,
and like I said, he also said that thing to Kipps that like he realized what's really important to him.
Yeah.
It's George and Lucy. And so this is a way of, he's like, you know, they're a family that he pays. It's a little weird, but
the family that he hired.
Right.
So in regards to book three, I did order that copy that you found for me. It was a used copy. It's hardcover. It arrived.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Oh no. Is it in bad shape or does it have the sticker thing?
It doesn't have the Netflix in irremovable sticker, but it used to be a library copy. So it is covered in other crap.
Oh.
I would never buy a used library copy. As much as I love a used book, they're great.
Is it written in?
Not that I've noticed, but it's got like two stickers on the outside, three stickers on the spine, sorry. And they're like, they're on there. The dust jacket. Oh, like
library stickers?
Yeah. Okay. Like one says YA and one says like STR for Stroud and, you know, that sort of thing. And one might be like a security sticker or something. I don't know. And then the dust jacket was covered in a like a plastic protective layer, which is fine. I can get rid of that. But that was taped on to the actual book.
Interesting.
On the inside. God. And the tape will rip up the papery cover on the inside of the cover. So, you know, it's fine for podcasting, I guess.
You can put sticky notes in it.
Yeah, I can write in that one to my heart's content. But it did not solve my problem of having a nice hardcover copy to match the rest of my books.
You need a signed Jonathan Stroud
hardcover of book three, specifically my least favorite book in the series. I'm sure that's the one I would love to have signed.
With no Netflix.
Yeah, with no Netflix sticker. Yeah, well.
At least it was cheap, I guess.
It was cheap, and shipping was free, so that's fine. Yeah, I'll try again sometime.
That's too bad. Did we have a favorite joke from these three chapters?
Oh my God, I did. I think I even underlined it, but now it's gone from my brain.
I really liked the moment where they're all apologizing, and Lucy's like, personally, I am not apologizing to anyone, at least not until after a nap.
I also loved that moment, but I don't think of it as a joke. I guess, you know what, I underlined this, so I'm going to go with this. But the bit that you read out where Lockwood was like, nothing like him. He was a weird, friendless sociopath with a morbid death obsession, while you...
Yeah.
That's good. And then even just the follow-up of like, well, you have two friends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just to make you feel worse.
Yeah, it's great. I have been sitting here while we've been recording this, like, removing the post-its because it's been bothering me for weeks now.
I was just clicking through the glossary and I was like, oh, he included a definition of catafalque, even though it's not like a made up term for his book. That's like very kind of him.
I genuinely thought you were going to say he included a definition of flapjacks.
I could look. I don't think so.
I'm sure he didn't. But that's what I don't know, because I was so focused on this one insignificant detail.
He did not. It goes Fitz Manual, Floating Bride, Gallows Mark.
But so this is wild to me there, because they changed stand to sit, but they kept in flapjacks, even though it makes no sense for them to be, like, from an American point of view, to be eating flapjacks in their hands.
I wonder if the editor knew, though. You know what I mean?
No, like, yeah. Yeah, I totally believe that they don't know that the UK flapjacks are a thing. But, well, I guess they're weird teenagers, so maybe they are just eating pancakes. You know, rolling them up and eating them like a bar.
I mean, I've definitely eaten pancakes that way. And if it had said that he rolled it up, but it didn't. And so in my mind, Lockwood has like a floppy part of a pancake going down his wrist while he's like shoving the other part of it into his mouth. And I'm like, you're a psychopath, Lockwood. While he's like, George, you're such a sociopath. Like eating the pancake like that. I'm like, what is wrong with you? But then I remember that he doesn't have parents who raised him, so...
Then I remember he's an orphan.
So he has no manners.
Poor Lockwood.
Poor Lockwood. I mean, for punk rock, I would have to, you know, Lucy, like, handling Bickerstaff, like, it's not a thing.
I was going to say that Lockwood did indeed jump into the dark black hole.
Yeah, after he fought down five people or whatever.
Like, that's pretty good. I don't like to give it to Lockwood when Lucy's right there, but you know,
he's a hero.
Yeah. I would never, if I did, I'd have a broken knee or five, but
I think there's a moment. So in the show, they ride the catafalque back up, but in the book, they don't do that.
No, they find the stairs and they walk back up.
They find the stairs. And I was like, did Lockwood jump down there?
And no, I think, like, this was covered stairs. That the stairs was locked. They could not get to the stairs from above.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right.
But when they found the key on Joplin's body. So
that's funny. So
that would be funny, though, if they had just opened that door, there would have been stairs, because they spent like a whole chapter struggling to get the catafalque to work.
I could imagine like a little scene where they like get back to the catafalque and Lucy's like, you didn't use a rope to get down? And he was like, there wasn't time. I had to come save you. And then George is like, I found some stairs over here. Did you guys know about
that? Would have been good.
You didn't use the stairs. That's how we got down here. We didn't ride the catafalque, weirdos. But yeah, that's The Whispering Skull by Jonathan Stroud, as you said, the second book in the Lockwood & Co. series. And we're going to take a little break before the Hollow Boy, let your library edition air out a little bit.
It's terrible. I don't even like looking at it.
Aw.
I thought my problems were solved, but instead I just have different problems.
It's like you bought something.
That's just the way life goes. Yep. I have to ask, you wrote in the words night lamps here.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to talk about the email that we got.
Right.
Yeah. So we had talked about Kat Godwin trying to be Rapunzel in the Bickerstaff mansion, lighting off a bunch of hanging lamps and being like, what is a night lamp? Kat Godwin has a night lamp. And we were like, what are you talking about? And we got a email from Shirley, and she wrote in nice compliments that I won't read. And she said, I have an idea of what a night lantern may be. Stargazers use flashlights or lanterns with red film over the light because the red light allows them to see, but doesn't affect their pupil aperture. so they can still see the stars when looking through their telescopes. The same kind of light is used in old school photo dark rooms.
Right.
It's just a guess.
That would make sense.
This makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah. Yeah. Because like Lockwood wanted to turn the lights down to preserve their ability to see so they could still see the ghost.
Yeah.
And for them to like have a lamp that does that makes a lot of sense to
Especially
me.
Especially for Fitz to have a lamp that does that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably more expensive and like harder to get and all of that kind of stuff.
I feel like they could have called them something else, but
yeah,
that's fair. I accept that as canon.
Yeah. It's also like kind of creepy. Cat Godwin walking around with like a red light everywhere, like makes her.
Can you imagine walking into a haunted house and lighting it up with red light?
With red.
No. Yeah. No, I will just die. You know, just let them take me. Goodness.
Yeah. So thanks for writing in, Shirley. I was like, oh, that's probably true. It makes way more sense than what we said.
Or if not true, it makes so much sense that we've decided it's true.
Yeah.
If you have a different explanation about night lamps, you can shout out to us on Twitter at Lockwood Podcast, or you can follow me in particular on Twitter at Inferior Caitlin.
You can send us emails like Shirley did, contact@hallowedgroundmedia.com, or you can go to our contact page, hallowedgroundmedia.com/contact.
And remember that cursed objects don't count if your vision is blurry.